Let's cross to Asia now, and our correspondent Ed White is in with us. Kia ora, Ed. Thanks for being with us today. It's been a big week for, well, for everyone and for climate change politics. A surprise agreement with the United States, though, for China.
Yes. Good morning, Susie. So just a week ago, really the big story from this global climate conference was that Xi Jinping, China's president, was missing, and Xi's absence from Glasgow, coupled with Beijing's decision not to upgrade significantly its commitments from the Paris Accord in 2015, had really rankled many leaders that had gathered in Glasgow, including Joe Biden. And then in something of a surprise to many, the US and China on Wednesday made a rare joint declaration to cooperate on climate change. Now, reports from the venue suggested that this demonstration of cooperation by the country's climate envoys, John Kerry for the US and Xie Jinhua for China, it really appeared to sort of send something of a jolt through the conference. Officials had been bogged down in, you know, the torturous details of all the final negotiations. However, while this pledge maybe marked a positive sign of a thaw in these sort of frosty ties that have been there between Beijing and Washington, it did immediately draw fairly sharp criticism from environmental groups and experts because it lacked any really new concrete commitments or detailed plans. Taking just a little step back, there are estimates that China needs to unleash something like $6.5 trillion in green investments and radically reorganize its economy if the planet is to win the fight against climate change. And that money is about double what China has been spending every year, and it's going to need to do that for the next 40 years. And so some environmentalists and economists watching on from the sidelines of COP26 are still questioning whether Beijing is really committed or has the stomach for the sort of fundamental changes that it will almost certainly need to make, including bearing much slower economic growth. Now, part of what is fueling this criticism of China has been Beijing's recent U-turn on coal mining and coal-fired power production. They have basically ramped those back up in recent months in an urgent response to energy shortages in China. And so two critical questions really remain at this stage is whether China has the sort of financial capacity through its state banks and state lenders to funnel this sort of really unparalleled amount of money towards renewable energy, and also just how Beijing would potentially manage the decline of what is a really sprawling fossil fuel industry in China and all of the industries that are associated with that. And so even despite that US-China agreement, which was seen as positive, many experts watching the space are still just concerned that the Chinese government hasn't quite explained how it is going to deal with these really legacy and quite pivotal issues that it faces.
So with this approach being taken, what can be concluded as a result of what China's doing?
Well, I mean, one of the key questions is just around this question around how they will get enough money into the development of renewable energy. And I think there is one sort of positive thing that might have flown under the radar this week, and that is that China's central bank actually basically made a really interesting and quite long awaited decision, and they unveiled a new monetary facility which is set about supporting decarbonisation projects. And this is notable because they didn't put a limit on how much money will be available to finance renewable projects. So that was seen as positive. For its part, China has really bristled at the pressure from the US and other Western governments over its responsibilities in responding to the climate crisis. It's frequently emphasised its own status as a developing country, and you know, the idea basically being that climate targets will always be flawed if they miss the fact that developing countries won't have the money themselves to finance all of these renewable energy projects that need to be built. Now, well, there may be some truth to that, and one thing that's also important just in terms of the direction that China's going to take on this is that despite all of that doubt that I mentioned over the lack of specific targets and the lack of any sort of updated targets from Paris, from Beijing, there is still a view formalizing among experts that the direction on this set by Xi Jinping is actually very clear. Xi Jinping has linked climate to China's security issues. He's linked it to things like the national rejuvenation, which are really favorite themes of his. And so there's a sense that no Chinese officials or companies or vested interests in the sort of fossil fuels industry will really be of two minds, that they should actually be putting their efforts towards the climate fight now.
Xi Jinping, not in Glasgow for COP26, as you were saying earlier. He has, though, been center stage in Beijing.
Yes, really quite an important week, again, flying under the radar in Chinese politics. The Chinese Communist Party's top political organ has been meeting since Monday to really lay the groundwork for Xi to continue on as the head of the party and as the president for the foreseeable future. So this meeting this week, it's called the Sixth Plenum. It is all leading up to an important party congress later next year, when Xi is expected to take an historic third term as the general secretary of the Communist Party. Of course, all of this has been held deeply, deeply behind closed doors in Beijing. And I think the best analogy that I've heard is that this is something like a papal conclave to elect the Pope in Rome. So while we've not been quite waiting on the white smoke to emerge from the Sistine Chapel, it wasn't until late last night, Thursday evening in Beijing, that a signal was issued by Chinese state media that a pivotal resolution on the country's history had been indeed adopted by the Communist Party leaders. And so, according to a summary that was published by Xinhua, the news agency, this resolution on history has been formally adopted by the party's central committee, and it declared that Xi's leadership was the key to the great rejuvenation of the Chinese nation. Now, for China and for Chinese people, this meeting has distinct echoes from key moments in the country's history. Basically, Mao Zedong and Deng Xiaoping used these six plenum meetings, so a year out from the very big party congresses that happen every 5 years, they used these meetings to secure their own long reigns as transformational leaders. And so by using this plenum to pass a resolution on history, this has only been done twice before, once by Mao in 1945 and then again by Deng in 1981. And so this all just helps to justify or set the stage for Xi to break the protocols since Deng of Chinese leaders serving a maximum of 2 5-year terms. And so Chinese state media has been really hard at work to praise Xi. There's no questioning of this. There's no questioning of potential successors. And this is a really, really big change. If you look at the cases of Hu Jintao and Jiang Zemin, Xi's predecessors, both of their successors were identified 5 years in advance and each presided over a fairly orderly transition of power. So for people wondering why this all matters, well, the key thing here is that this appears really increasingly possible that Xi, who is only 68, remember, he could easily be China's de facto ruler for the rest of his life with no serious opposition. And this has really, I mean, to be frank, unknown but definitely huge implications. The means that the rest of the world has to come to terms with the world's most populous country and currently the second biggest economy being guided for the foreseeable future by the same man who, you know, already has a reputation for guiding China towards a much more nationalistic approach, perhaps even, you know, slightly inward focused, and of course only deepening, or he's got tendencies to deepen some of the Communist Party's worst tendencies, you know, ruthlessly cracking down on dissent. So fairly significant week for China.
Indeed. Just bring us up to date with the situation in China with COVID and how that strategy is playing out.
Yes. So really quickly, I mean, under China's strategy of eliminating coronavirus completely, Beijing has enforced more than 18 months now, perhaps even 20 months now, of strict border security, including 3-week quarantine stays, fewer visas for business people and their families. These rules have been credited for helping to suppress the coronavirus outbreaks. But a worsening outbreak of the Delta variant, which popped up in Inner Mongolia in October, this has prompted a return to local lockdowns and travel bans after spreading through now 2/3 of China's regions. Now, the numbers are still very, very low, sort of double-digit new cases each day. But it is sort of raising questions around what the exit strategy for China is going to be. They've vaccinated close to 80% of their 1.4 billion population, now moving on to vaccines for children and triple the third booster shots, but no exit strategy at the moment.
Appreciate your time this morning. That is Ed White, our Asia correspondent.